Welcome to the Sunshine Gardening Podcast, where we aim to help you nurture your passion for gardening. I'm Kristen Hildebrand, your host. In today's episode, we talk with guest Kenneth Clayton, University of Kentucky Extension Associate in Turfgrass, who will share some valuable tips on spring lawn care for Kentucky. We will discuss the do's and the don'ts of maintaining a healthy Kentucky lawn, from rejuvenating grass to avoiding common pitfalls. Our goal is to equip you with the knowledge and skills to cultivate a lush, thriving lawn that will last throughout the season. So dust off your lawn mowers, roll up your sleeves, and join us as we dive into the world of spring lawn care.
Welcome to the Sunshine Gardening Podcast. This gardening show will equip and inspire avid gardeners with tips and tricks to help them navigate the gardening world. The show will also highlight specific growing requirements for seasonal plants, so the sun will shine brighter over their Kentucky garden. And now, here's that ray of sunshine, garden enthusiast and horticulture extension agent, Kristen Hildebrand, with the University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. And again, today we have Kenneth Clayton, and he is talking about a little bit with us about the do's and don'ts for spring lawn care. How are you doing, Kenneth?
I'm doing well, Kristen. Thanks for having me on again.
Yes, we had a lot of good feedback from your spring weed control for the home lawns. And again, you can check that out if you want to go check that in the show. But today we're explaining a little bit more about the do's and the don'ts related to spring lawn care here in Kentucky. And it seems like I always get questions this time of year. And a lot of folks feel like it's the perfect time for doing a lot of different maintenance practices for their home lawn. But whenever I get to talking to them further into the conversation, then you tell them some of these things and it's kind of like a little bit of a surprise. And I feel like a lot of it kind of relates to marketing. And when you go into these big box stores, you know, a lot of these products are right there in their face. So they probably feel like it is the right time. But according to our research-based information, it's really maybe the second best time or the not so best time. So that's why you're here today, is to explain a little bit more about the do's and don'ts with spring lawn care. I want to just start off with this question. What things should we be doing right now for the home lawn here in Kentucky?
Yes, absolutely. It's an exciting time right now. The sun is out. Soil temperatures are warming up. Some of our flowers are starting to bloom. And the marketing in the big box stores is in full swing. So it's a great time to get out and do lawn work. Of course, like you said, we are somewhat playing catch up. That's the fall is our number one time in the state of Kentucky to do cool season lawn work. But now is the second best time. And so things that we want to make sure that we're doing is to maintain that equipment, our lawn mowers and our weed eaters. And predominantly there, we want to maintain sharp blades. We want to start the year out right with cutting the grass and not ripping the grass. By maintaining sharp blades, we're going to prevent that often what can look like a white lawn when you drive by and it looks tinged across the top. That's often because the mower blades were not sharp enough. And so rather than cutting the top of the grass, it was actually ripping the top of the grass, tearing it. And so that'll give that scraggly white look on your lawn. So that's first thing, is to start out with properly maintenanced equipment. Another thing to do is to get a soil test. Take that into your local extension office so that you can make fertilizer applications based upon data and not just guessing. And then you also want to, if you haven't already, go ahead and purchase some seed, some pre-emergent herbicides, fertilizers, things that you may need in the lawn this spring. It's better to have those ready to go when the temperature turns than to be chasing your tail at the last minute. The other thing to do is to, if you have an irrigation system, is to check that irrigation system. As you prime it up this spring, turn all those heads on and watch them. Often, you're not going to notice those deficiencies in irrigation until we get into a time of drought. But now's the time to check those and make repairs as necessary.
Yeah, and sometimes those, especially after like the winter season, it's always good to double check that irrigation system. I know I don't have one, but if you do have that added system and added you know, benefit of it, then it's always good to make sure it all works like it's supposed to. Now, with the mowing blades that you mentioned there, is it okay for people to do that themselves, or should they look at going at a mechanic type shop? I mean, I guess it just kind of goes back to what the homeowner feels comfortable with, but what do you suggest?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, if you have a vise and a file, you can sharpen your lawnmower blades. You do not need to purchase brand new lawnmower blades every year. It's nice to have an extra blade or two on hand that are sharp and ready to go, so you can swap those out and sharpen when you have a rainy day and time to be in the shop. But a simple grinder or just a file will work just as well. Also, you can buy cheap balances, which are helpful. So when you sharpen those blades, you set it on this little triangle balance that will help you to make sure that you haven't taken off too much on one side or the other, which will help that blade not to wobble and rattle so much when you're mowing with it. But I'm sure the mechanics in your area would be happy to service your mower for a price. So that's whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah. And so if you do go that avenue or that route, you probably want to get in line really quickly, because I know the spring really does fill up really fast with people needing that service done. And then with that mower blade, when you put it back on, it's probably good to know what's top and what's bottom, right?
That's right. Yes. It should be pretty evident when you put it onto the mower. You want the sharp end lowest to the ground, so when it spins, it is cutting.
We want you to avoid that mistake if at all possible. So just kind of make it like a little indicator sign to know what's top and what's bottom. Yes. Now, I know, Kenneth, that a lot of people come into the office. You mentioned several things that we need to do to kind of get the mower ready, which I think is great. But a lot of people think that right now is a good time to seed their lawn in the spring if they want to improve it, or say that they've got some thinning that may be going on. So is spring a good time for that?
Sure. It is the second best time of the year. And with last fall, actually the past two falls, we've been quite dry. So there wasn't always success in the fall seeding. So you can definitely seed in the spring. It is a little bit more of a challenge establishing that seed in the spring because of the increased weed pressure. And if you are seeding in the spring, you do not want to apply a pre-emergent herbicide before seeding, because that same herbicide that's going to prevent your crabgrass and your goosegrass from germinating is also going to prevent your bluegrass and your tall fescue from germinating. So that's important. We like to try to seed in the fall because that allows that cool season grass two cool growing periods into the fall going into the winter, and then in the spring heading into the summer to mature before it gets hit with the heat of a Kentucky summer. So you're taking one of those cool growing seasons away, but it can be successfully done. Seeding earlier rather than later is better, and you may need to use more post-emergent herbicides to control some of those things like crabgrass later in the season so that doesn't outcompete your new seedlings.
I appreciate you going a little bit more in detail, because it's almost like, can I put the pre-emergent down if I seed, and how does that look like? So those are all good things to really think ahead and know. Now, the other question that we get, and this kind of goes back to what we alluded to earlier in the show, but talk to us about those weed and feed products that are at the, like, as soon as you walk in the door of the big box stores. Should we apply those or should we not apply those?
You are welcome to apply them if you have weeds present. I highly recommend scouting your lawn. Don't just follow a calendar or buy the four season package, whatever you need at the big box store. Walk your lawn and see what weeds you have present, and then look at those weed and feeds and see if that will kill the weeds that you have present. Typically for herbicides, we don't see as good of results with granular products as we do when we spray those weeds. We see a better translocation, more contact with the weeds when we spray them, but not everybody feels comfortable mixing. Not everybody has a sprayer, and the granulars are very easy to spray. Another thing to take into consideration is that they often come on fertilizer prills. So if you don't need that additional fertilizer, you may be pushing growth and mowing more than what you want to with those weed and feeds. But the herbicides do work, and you want to apply those when the leaf blades are moist and help the herbicides to stick to the weeds.
Now, what about the fertilizing aspect of the weed and feed products? How does that work?
Yeah, so fertility, and maybe that's a broader topic to cover at all, is when do I fertilize my lawn? We say get a soil test, but there is not a accurate soil test for nitrogen. We're typically looking at potassium and phosphorus. And thankfully, in the state of Kentucky, we have soils that are sufficient in potassium and phosphorus for turf grass. So typically, the limiting factor in the growth of the grass is either water or nitrogen. And so in the spring, it again is our second best time to fertilize, but I'm not too dogmatic about that. I like to think about if the grass is growing sufficiently, if you're mowing once a week, your grass is dense, if the color is suitable to you, then you don't need to fertilize. Even if your soil test comes back from Kristen and it says you're low in phosphorus or you're low in potassium, that is a good indicator, but I like to look at the grass. For instance, if your grass is, you're mowing once a week, it looks healthy. Unless you want to mow twice a week, there's no need to apply additional fertility to that lawn. With fertility, I like to be reactive. If my lawn is not dense enough and I'm dealing with weed issues, the color's not there, I'm going to apply nitrogen first and foremost. And then if my soil test shows that I'm low in potassium or low in phosphorus and the grass is not growing well, then I'll apply those additional nutrients as well. I don't like to spend the extra money. And also there's issues with phosphorus and water quality. So we want to be careful not to apply those. And if you read the literature, things like dandelions are actually most prevalent in high potassium soils. So applying potassium in that situation may increase your weed pressure. So with fertility, I like to be reactive. With weeds, I like to be proactive. So getting down pre-emergent herbicides and spraying weeds when they're very small. So that's kind of my mentality when it comes to fertility and weeds on the lawn.
Yes. And one of the other questions I had that kind of relates to the fertilizer end of this question is the lime. Sometimes, you know, based on that soil test that you mentioned there, and we can certainly help you with that at your local extension office to, you know, send that off and look at the recommendations. But what about the liming aspect? Can that be done any time of year, or is it better in the spring or the fall? What's your take on that?
Yeah, liming can be done any time of year. And so if your pH is low and you need to increase that pH, then you can apply lime throughout the year. Right now is a good time to do that as well, but it's not an immediate effect. It's going to take some time for that lime to work to change the pH of the soil. And with turf grasses, we have a wide range that these grasses will grow healthy. Typically, most of our cool season grasses around 6.5 is ideal, but I've seen grass grow very well, everything from a 5.5 all the way up to an 8. So it's not an issue in most cases. When you start, you know, getting down closer to a 5, if you have very acidic soils, definitely consider liming those soils.
Yes. And then my next question for the lime also is that there's different ways that you can buy lime. I guess there's like an ag lime, and then there's like also a more specialized lawn lime that's pelletized. Is there one that's better over the other, or maybe you can weigh out some of the pros and cons with that? I know it seems like the pelletized lime is a little bit more expensive, but I've heard it can have its advantages too.
Yes, and I actually have not applied much lime because
okay.
have been good. So speaking from experience, that I don't have much. I think the predominant benefit of the pelletized is that it's easier to put through a spreader, you know, versus the ag lime, the dust that are, you know, you see being spread in fields across the state are a little bit messier, a little dustier, a little bit harder to get through the spreader. But it's my understanding that all of those products will work equally well. It's just a convenience factor there.
Well, I appreciate you giving us that information, especially with the weed and feed products, because it's like, should I apply it? Should I not apply it? And that's all good information to make us aware. Now, I'm going to transition just a little bit, and this is talking more about the spring mowing that's we're about to embark on. And it seems like that can get very mundane. It can get, you know, where we've got other things going on too in the spring. So can you give us like some general recommendations for mowing our lawn? How often should we do that? I know spring rain can delay that a little bit. So if you can kind of give us some general recommendations for mowing, so that way, because it is something that we do all the time, but it really helps the appearance of the lawn too.
Yes. So it typically, we want to be mowing our lawns about once a week. There is the 1/3 rule is not to remove more than 1/3 of the total height of the grass at any one time. But I haven't met anyone who goes out and actually measures their lawn and then takes 1/3 off. So it is something you read over and over again, and it's a good rule of thumb. But basically, you don't want to mow so much that you're leaving clumps of clippings that would then smother the grass. And you don't want to mow so much that you're removing all of the green tissue from those leaves. So we don't want to scalp the lawns, and we don't want to mow too infrequently that we would have, you know, so much clippings there that it would clump it and fall into the lawn to smother those. So when we mow frequently, we'll actually get a higher quality, denser lawn than we mow infrequently. So things like our tall fescues are bunch clumpy grasses, but when we plant them dense enough and we mow them frequently enough, we don't see those clumps like you would in a pasture or a field. So that's important. And even with some of the robotic mowers that are now, you know, mowing the grass every single day and are lightweight and can mow when it's wet because they're never taking off that much of the grass. I mean, we see really high quality mowing out of some of those. So if you can simulate that and not letting the grass get too high and not scalping, not mowing too low, that'll produce a dense, thick lawn that we desire.
Yes. And it seems like whenever you do keep a lot more of that leaf tissue in that grass, then it seems like it handles the weed pressure, it handles the disease pressure a lot better. Because I have met some people that enjoy getting on the lawnmower, but then they end up scalping it. And then that just introduces all kinds of issues. But for the lawnmowers that can mow out there themselves, is that something that's becoming... Have you noticed that more in the big cities, or is it just all over? I'm just curious.
Well, I consider Lexington a big city, I guess, but it is not as popular here in Europe. It's rather popular, and it's strange to see somebody mowing their lawn in certain countries versus robotic mowers. But we have definitely seen a lot of the big mower companies developing robotic mowers. I know personally, you know, just talking to some family friends that are interested, and a few of them have tried it. It's just like all technology. It's with time, those price points will drop and technology will improve. So it's definitely a viable option for folks. The research that I've seen, the turf quality has been very good with those robotic mowers. I'll say too, Kristen, on the mowing is that the height is very important as well as the frequency. We talked a little bit about off air about Bermuda grass. And if you can keep your cool season lawns, that tall fescue, closer to that 4-inch mark, you're going to have a lot better success on suppressing things like Bermuda grass and weeds in general. So typically, it's counterintuitive, but a lot of folks, you know, they want to go out in the spring and I'm going to mow it as slow as I can so I don't have to come back and mow it again. But actually, that grass, apart from scalping it down to the dirt, will actually grow faster when you mow it lower than if you mow it higher. So if you don't like mowing the grass that much, leaving it at a 3 to 4 inch range is going to help you to reduce your mowing rather than increase it.
I like that. I like that. Good food for thought if you're trying to be strategic when you're out there mowing. I know that you covered several things of the do's, but is there some things that we need to avoid for spring lawn care in Kentucky?
We touched on it a little bit there, but I would say don't just fertilize to fertilize. Again, if the grass is healthy, if it's dense and it's growing well, you may not need to apply any fertility to that lawn, especially if you are not bagging your clippings, but you're recycling those clippings, you're returning nutrients to the ground, you're not taking them away. You may need very little inputs Typically, nitrogen may be the only thing that you'll need, and somewhere between 1 to 2 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year, what we recommend in the state of Kentucky for a healthy turf grass stand. And especially with things like potassium and phosphorus, for water quality issues, we don't want to apply phosphorus unless your soil report shows that it's low. So it is possible with, you know, newer subdivisions and new builds where they've moved dirt around and you don't have that good topsoil that was originally there. We want to test those and see what the levels are. But generally speaking, our soils are quite rich in potassium and phosphorus, and those two may not need to be applied. So good for the environment, good for your wallet there. We mentioned it, don't scalp your lawn. That's one that can be unintentional as well. We get spring rains, it can be hard to get out there. The rains and weather doesn't always work, so you can mow on Saturday mornings. The thing I'll do is if you do get rain and haven't been on the lawn for a while, try to raise the height of that mower and come in and mow it, and then come in again, you know, a couple days later and mow that down again so that we don't have clipping smothering the lawn with that. So those are the main two things I would say to not do in the spring.
One quick question I want to ask you before we end the show today is one of the questions that we do get is, say I've got an area in my lawn that doesn't get a lot of sunlight because I've got a canopy of trees, whether it be oak or maple. What do you do in those type situations? Do you kind of lean in one direction or do you recommend something else? I'm just curious how you would handle that question.
Yes, that is a challenging situation. And ultimately, to grow grass well, it does best in full sun. But most home lawns, from the house, from the trees, from playsets, deal with some amount of shade. Our fine fescues are typically our most shade-tolerant cool season grasses, but even our tall fescues can do well in the shade with minimal traffic on them. And so raising the height of those plants a little bit can help so they can get as much sunlight as possible. That can help, but there is challenges there that you can't always win. So just being willing to deal with a little bit reduced turf quality there, thinning of those trees to allow more sunlight in as possible is another option there as well. But there's breeding work being done on grasses every year, and new varieties tend to improve. So be aware of new varieties that come out. If you're planting Kentucky 31 from 50 years ago, then a newer variety can potentially give you more shade tolerance.
Yeah, I always like to hear the new research that's being done, especially with the shade tolerant varieties, because we always have that question every single year. I can just bank on it. Kenneth, I know we've covered a lot of information about do's and don'ts related to spring lawn care in Kentucky lawns. Do you have any resources or publications anywhere that you would send people if they do have more questions related to these topics?
Yes, the University of Kentucky's Turfgrass Science website has all of our publications on there. And if you search UKY Turfgrass, that'll usually be the first one that pops up. And we'll also leave a link to that in the show notes that you can click. And my contact information is on there. You get a hold of Kristen, she can get a hold of me, and we can help you answer specific questions for your lawn.
Yes. And hopefully this episode has been helpful. And you've actually done an episode with us that relates more to spring lawn weed control for Kentucky lawns too. So make sure to go back and check that out on the Sunshine Gardening Podcast. Kenneth, thank you so much again for being a guest on the show. And we hope to have you back in the fall when it's the absolute best time to be doing those lawn care practices.
Yes, absolutely. And as we may do a summer episode as well on warm season grasses, because I know as we get into Western Kentucky, desirable Zoysia grass and Bermuda grass is definitely a viable option, and we're not too late to do work on those.
Yeah. So there you go. I really appreciate it. And again, we hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sunshine Gardening Podcast. We hope you found today's episode on the do's and the don'ts of spring lawn care in Kentucky informative and helpful in enhancing your gardening skills. Remember, proper care and attention are crucial for maintaining a robust and lively lawn. Thank you to our guest, Kenneth Clayton, for joining us today. To access the show notes for episode 26, please visit me on the blog at warrencountyagriculture.com. Before we end the show, make sure to hit the subscribe button to the Sunshine Gardening Podcast so you can receive future gardening tips, inspiration, and knowledge straight to your ears. So stay tuned for more episodes filled with valuable tips and gardening wisdom. Until next time, happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to the Sunshine Gardening Podcast with Kristen Hildebrand. If you enjoyed today's content, make sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts to catch future segments of the Sunshine Gardening Podcast. Gardeners, keep on digging and learning more about gardening so the sun shines brighter over your Kentucky garden. The Sunshine Gardening Podcasts with Kristen Hildebrand is a production of the University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service.